Off the Ball Breakfast.
GAA players are in amazing shape. Their fitness is incredible. They look professional in every aspect of it, but amazingly, like, these people still have jobs.
Live every weekday morning from 7:30 on your smart speaker. Just ask Alexa to play OTB Sports Radio.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
With UPMC Orthopaedic Care. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action.
Welcome back. Thursday morning's Off the Ball Breakfast. Delighted now to be joined for the first time this season by BBC Sports finest Tom English. Tom, good morning.
Good morning. How are we doing?
To paraphrase, I've never been at a club that sacks the board, but they sacked the manager all right. This is Brendan Rodgers speaking afterwards last night. Is the end nigh, or is that reading too much into it?
I think it's reading too much into it, but I can understand the question, because I think this is the third time now he's gone down this road since the start of the season about the lack of players. His frustration about the lack of players coming in. So that's what everyone at Celtic is talking about. That's what the Celtic fans are talking about now. Why is there not more players coming through? There's a lot of money at the club. Why do they continually do this dance in the transfer market, leave it to the last minute, frustrate the manager? Ange Postecoglou was frustrated before Brendan Rodgers, and Brendan Rodgers was frustrated in his first spell about this transfer policy and this kind of, this almost kind of differing versions of the word ambition. Brendan Rodgers has one interpretation of the word ambition, and it seems that the Celtic board have a different version of the word ambition. And it's all around money and the scale of the money they're prepared to spend. But certainly last night was shouts of sack the board. Previous night at Ibrox, it was sack the manager. So we're in August, and it's getting pretty incendiary here, lads.
The numbers don't seem to stack up, Tom, because Celtic win the league. They should have a bit of money. But if the outlay so far has been, I was saying earlier on the show, is a throwback to the early 2000s and spending 1.7 million for the most expensive outlay, I think, so far this summer. 1.5 million for the next, 300,000, then a free transfer with Kieran Tierney. It's small money for a club who should have a lot of it.
Yeah, I think there's 65 million-ish in the bank. There'll be more now because more money has come in since then. They're one victory away from another 40 million coming in if they beat Carrot and Matty next Tuesday. So there's, the club is very well run financially. There's a lot of money there. There's a lot of frustration there. Now, you have to say, the performance last night was awful. It was lacked inspiration, it lacked speed, it lacked everything. It was very dull and pretty insipid. But in terms of the whole spending money thing, you can't give Rodgers a free pass, because last night on his bench, he had Arne Engels, who cost 11 million. He had Austin Trusty, who cost 6 million, and he had Paolo Bernardo, who cost about 3.5 million. These are his signings. So those guys are not in his team. The board are entitled. I don't know if they are asking. The board never speak to us. The board, but if they are asking a question about, hang on a second, we've given you a ton of money, relatively speaking, in Scottish terms, and your players aren't good enough to get into your team. What's going on here? So it's his comments post match last night were, we wondered what he was going to do. Was he going to double down on the stuff that he has been saying and putting pressure and almost challenging the board? Or would he just bite his tongue a little bit? But he doubled down in a fairly major way.
Are we getting to the point where the result of the return leg is potentially defining?
He's got a contract until the end of the season. Yeah. That's another thing. There's a narrative around that. He's alluded to that there is no contract on the table for him. Now, would he sign a contract if it was there? There's more confusion there. I think it's probably too much to say that if they get knocked out of the Champions League, that's it, that he's going to leave. But I think it just piles the pressure on again if they do. And it's probably 50-50 now. Maybe slightly in favour of Celtic, because I don't think they could be as bad again. And Carrot are a average enough team. They defended really, really well last night. But Celtic, at their best, can still win this. But they've put it in jeopardy. They put it in jeopardy by putting in a pretty weak performance, lacking freshness, lacking new players. So the Celtic fans are saying, hang on a second, we should not be going to Almaty next week in fear of making the Champions League and all the loot that comes with it. We should have taken care of this team in the first leg, and had we done our business in the transfer market, we would have done it. So there's a lot of rancor, a lot of good things happening at Celtic, you know, domestic dominance, obviously. They made progress in Europe last season, but the frustration is that they've stagnated, and that's a big fear of the Celtic fans right now.
Is everybody a little bit right? Are the board a little bit right? Because looking back on last summer's transfer activity, or last season's transfer activity, because obviously Jota comes back, I think, in wintertime, they spent about 40 million all told. So to your point, there has been investment. The fans want to see more investment off the back of last season's success. They have some merit in their argument. And to the board's point that you made already, the signings haven't been great. So it feels like everybody's trying to wait to see if they get into the Champions League, at which point they might sign some new players, whereas actually the right thing might have been to risk the fact that they were going to get through by signing some good players, but they don't quite trust each other yet.
Yeah, and I think that has been the issue for quite some time. You know, they wait and they say, right, are we spending Champions League money here? And again, Celtic's interpretation of Champions League money, or are we spending Europa League money in the transfer market? And that frustrates Rodgers. It frustrates the fans. But you're right. There's right on both sides here. And it's just Celtic's model. And they kind of broke the model last year. They signed Adam Ida for 9 million. And Adam Ida is another Rodgers signing who's not really doing it. So that's 9 million quid's worth, you know, which is a fortune in Celtic terms. But there is the differing versions of the word ambition, and Rodgers wants them to kick on and spend the similar type of money again, whereas that was an outlier for Celtic. That was the most money they ever spent in a single season in the history of the club was last season. They're not going to keep doing that. They're more comfortable shopping in the market of you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 million pound players, like Kyogo, like a lot of the Ange Postecoglou signings. I think of 6 million was the most he spent. So they're way more comfortable in around that number than they are around the 9, 10, 11 million that they spent last season. And Rodgers wants them to spend more. So it's knotted right now.
It's a blunt enough financial question, but in terms of the highest paid player at Celtic, what kind of money do you know that they would be on? We're having this debate when Johnny Kenny signed his new contract, wondering how much would you actually get at Celtic for a player at that level? But then if you go to a player of prominent importance to Celtic, is it an attractive proposition for these players?
Yeah, I don't know. You'd be guessing. Yeah. Maybe 30-ish a week, maybe something of that order. Again, that's a kind of a guess. Mm. You'd imagine Callum McGregor would be on something like that.
Okay.
Maybe Arne Engels is on something like that, given he cost 11 million. But it's not easy, like, you know, there's a huge expectation in the club, and the fans are rightly very demanding, and Rodgers is rightly very demanding. But, you know, he said earlier this month that if it's just maintaining, then he's not the right manager for Celtic.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't want just a steering job here. He wants to be at a place, and I think his genuine love of the club, I don't think that's in dispute, but he just doesn't want to be making do. He wants to be convinced that the club is pushing on, and I don't think he's convinced of that right now.
We were having a conversation before we came on air about how attractive a proposition Celtic is for some of the best young talent, or some of the best talent, or any talent really. And for me, it's about positioning Celtic as a team who is going to give you Champions League football and expose you to that, sure, some of the rest of the season is fairly routine and mundane. You know, midweek and some of those away games can't be much crack. But if I was in charge of Celtic, I'd be making sure that we are world-class in data and world-class in scouting and world-class in coaching, because they've got enough money to be able to afford what all the best teams have when it comes to that. And then you hope that some of those players do end up being the next Virgil van Dijk or any of those players who they've had in recent seasons who they've been able to transfer on and do a good job. But they don't seem to have any of that stuff in place that you would be able to point to and go, well, that's world-class.
Yeah, you could definitely say that. And I think Rodgers would probably agree. I mean, he was asked after the match last night, you know, Michael Nicholson, the chief executive, said that we want to be world-class. He said, you know, a season ago or so, we want to be world-class in every department. And you can't say that this is what we see now is world-class, because they're weaker than they were last season. You know, Nicholas Kuhn scored 21 goals for them. He's gone to Como, winger. He was very, very good the first half of the season. He tailed off, but scored 21 goals. So he's gone. Kyogo, iconic centre forward, beloved striker, gone. Jota brought back, injured until next year. So James Forrest, stalwart of the club, legend of the club, but should only really be a kind of an impact sub now, isn't starting every game. Maeda has been brilliant for Celtic, but he's off the boil. Adamida is playing centre forward because there's really nobody else.
Right.
You know, so it's the holes in the squad were obvious. They've been obvious for a while. Kyogo left in January, and they still don't have a stellar centre forward, and that's the one I think that's really riling Rodgers. And you know, he will want to bring in a striker at X value, and Celtic apparently are going, well, no, that's we don't want to bring him at some X value. We'll give you somebody at Y value, and he goes, well, I don't want somebody at Y. You know, I want better than that. So there, it's just. And that frustration did come out last night. And it'd be very interesting to see, not that we will, what Dermot Desmond makes of this. Mm. You know, because he is the one who's ultimately makes all the final decisions at Celtic. It's not Michael Nicholson, the chief executive. It's no longer Peter Lawwell, who's chairman now, but he's not the big decision maker that he has been for many, many years. It's with Desmond. And I think a lot of Celtic fans would love to hear from Desmond, but obviously Desmond never deigns to talk to the media.
Okay, yeah, so who knows what he makes of those comments from Rodgers last night then. In terms of the striker, what kind of profile of a player would that be? Because I'm thinking it wouldn't be a player necessarily on the wind down who still has a lot of quality and could score goals at that level because the salary isn't there. And so then you're trying to sign an up-and-comer who would be unproven. So that would inevitably lead to a frustration with Rodgers, who has history of playing with or managing high-profile strikers. I can understand the tension a bit.
Oh, yeah, totally. And like they got lucky with Kyogo. They didn't. They sourced him. Postecoglou knew him. They got him for about 4 million. And it was a bargain, you know. Yeah. I mean, everything that he did, all the goals that he scored, everything that he was, you know, he appealed to all generations of Celtic fan. Young fans thought he was super cool, and he was really, you know, he's kind of childish enthusiasm that young fans loved. He had class that reminded older Celtic fans of the way it used to be. So he was a kind of, he ticked all the boxes. Kyogo, and I think Rodgers would love someone like him. He's got a big, tall striker in Ida. He's got Maeda, who can play through the middle and did a great job last season. But he wants somebody else. He wants maybe a Kyogo type. That's somebody who's got an electric pace, who can get in behind. Nobody was getting in behind last night. So it's, and they're hard to come by. Mm. Of course they're hard to come by. But they've had a long time. They've had since January to think about this, and they still haven't come up with somebody. And you think if this is a world-class operation, that they'd have been able to pull the trigger on a striker by now from wherever, whatever part of the world they're scouting in, and their scouting should be pretty razor sharp now, because as you said, Jared, they've got a ton of money in the bank. This should be a very sophisticated operation, and it doesn't look like that now.
Well, I was going to ask, is that your impression, you know, when you hear about the academy and the scouting department and the analytics department, that actually that is the same as it would be at, say, Brighton or any of those other clubs that they're probably competing with talent for?
Yeah, they are. Well, look, the academy is, gosh, I've written and spoken about this on the BBC many times, and I don't think Celtic fans appreciate it when I do, but they're getting very little from their academy. And I think Rodgers trusts the players coming out of the academy. He might give somebody a game and then they disappear. And then somebody else might get a game, another kid might get a game, and he disappears. Postecoglou was exactly the same. Rodgers was the same in his first incarnation. So either the players coming through the academy are not good enough, or Rodgers is just kind of not convinced. There's not a lot happening on that front. So they're having to go outside, they're having to spend money, and the academy is, for me, the academy is a big story, because it's not doing it. It's just not doing it.
And the best young player to come through in the last number of years seems to have been Ben Doak, who has just gone from Liverpool to Bournemouth. He was 16 when Liverpool managed to sign him. I know that's always a risk with players who haven't signed their full professional contract, and there's some suggestion that maybe Celtic will benefit from a sell-on clause in that, but like it's slightly indicative of the situation they find themselves in. If anybody is really brilliant in the academy, they'll get plucked by one of the Premier League clubs and the dance continues.
Yeah, or they're not given an opportunity to play for Celtic and then they leave frustrated. You know, Doak played very little football for Celtic, very little, and then he moved on. You could say that about a number of players since then. They're not in Doak's calibre, nowhere near. But I wonder if Doak was put into the Celtic team on a regular basis when he was a kid, and why not, because he was clearly a very, very good player. Would they have got more out of him, and would they have got more money for him? You know, I just think their approach to young players of their own is a big talking point, you know. And Doak is the classic example of that.
That's the bit where you actually need to be world class, where you get those players in, you manage their minutes, you get them to a level, and then you flip them for way more money, and then you reinvest that. And players like want
they
to
are, they are they are listen they are very good at that, but it's signings. So, you know, Matt O'Reilly, they sign him for buttons and they sell him for 25 million. The Celtic are brilliant at that. You know, they got 25 million for Jota, they got 25 million for Tierney, they got buckets of money for Van Dijk and loads of other players. They have been very, very good at that in terms of that player trading model. Really good. I mean, that's why they've got so much money in the bank.
And that's the pitch to agents. That's why they should be able to get
totally
way more players.
Totally.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, you know, they got Van Dijk, they got Odson Edward, they got Matt O'Reilly, they got Jota. I'm leaving out probably some big names here now, but they've managed to do that, bring in players who are kind of largely unheralded, train them up. They do great things at Celtic, and then they move on. You know, it's they've been really accomplished at that.
I had one last one. If Rodgers, if this is headed for divorce, which seems unlikely, right? But it's not impossible, especially I didn't realise he's in the last 12 months of his contract. Mm. Are there obvious contenders on the Scottish scene for who might be a replacement?
Oh, gosh, I think we're getting slightly ahead of ourselves, but I don't know. Like, John Kennedy has been the assistant to Rodgers, has been the assistant for Postecoglou, who's been the assistant for Rodgers Mark One. Would it be John Kennedy's time if Rodgers was to leave at the end of the season? I don't think he's going to go anywhere before the end of the season, Ger. I just don't think he is. But more and more now I'm thinking that he's not going to be there beyond the end of the season. He's done everything, like, you know. Mm. He's a frustrated man now, but he's done everything. He's won all the trophies that he's going to win. And you'd imagine a manager of like him would think, right, like, I've had two spells now. I'm one of the longest serving Celtic managers in history. I've won tons of trophies. Let's do something else. I mean, that's logical. I don't think any Celtic fan would blame him for that. It wouldn't be like it was the first time when he went to Leicester.
Yeah, he did restore his relationship with the Celtic fans by coming back. Yeah. And if the breakup isn't on him this time, if it's actually on the club and the fans are now chanting on his behalf, sack the board, you can see at the end of the year, he goes, well, look, I've done my best. And you ride off into the sunset and...
He struck me last night post-match as a man comfortable with whatever decision is made. But that was just interpreting the way he said it, Tom. But the one question I have for you is, if frustration is high at the moment and morale is low, how is it improved? Because for most teams in the sport, it's winning games. But Tom, Celtic win games all the time. So like, if you look at it this year, like Scottish Premiership, they're 2 from 2. They haven't conceded a goal. Hearts are top in goal difference. But they've won their 2 games so far at Celtic. They beat Falkirk in the Scottish Cup 4-1 the last time out. They're still very much in this tie. They're probably going to go on a big domestic run of winning loads of games. So if nothing changes at the moment, how are things going to get better?
Things can flip very quickly here. So next Tuesday, if they beat Carrick Almaty, they're into the Champions League. That helps. At that point, signings will start pouring in the door.
Do you think so?
That's good. Okay. I do, yeah. I think they might get one or two before then. Certainly if they're into Champions League, we're going to see more signings. Now whether they're signings at the value that Rodgers wants, we don't know, but I think there will be bodies coming in, and maybe 3 or 4 will come in at that point. Celtic in the Champions League, new blood in the team, domestic dominance, all as well, and Rodgers kind of moves on to a new phase of his Celtic career, and all the Celtic fans stop singing sack the board because they're beating up everybody domestically and they've got all these Champions League games to look forward to. It could turn very, very quickly in a positive sense, but if they lose next Tuesday, the flip side is also true because a toxic atmosphere could really take hold at that point.
Yeah, yeah. Can I go? Do you want one more?
Look across the city.
At Rangers. Yeah, I might get to Rangers a second, but I just want to go around the house with the Irish contingent, if you don't mind, Tom. I don't want to ask the low hanging question of the perception from the fans of Adam Eda, because I know it's not good. Liam Scales played again last night. Johnny Kenny played at the weekend against Falkirk, I think. How are they getting on?
Well, Scales, let's start at the top.
Yeah. top of the Scales, yeah.
Scales, very good. Kind of the established partner for Carter Vickers now. An important player, an increasingly important player, keeping Austin Trusty, £6 million defender, on the bench for the big games. So he's doing really well. He's also... Celtic lack a backup left back to Kieran Tierney. Scales kind of is that at the moment. Yep. So he's a double value at the moment. So he's going really well. Johnny Kenny, bit part. Adam Eda, desperately struggling with confidence. Like, now, everyone has complained about Adam Eda, 9 million. He doesn't look 9 million, doesn't look anything like 9 million. And he doesn't. But I can't remember too many chances that Adam Eda has blown.
Right.
It's not like he's been given tons of chances, great deliveries into the box, and he's making a mess of them. He's not. Last night, he had very few chances. You could question his movement. You could just question his anticipation and all the rest of it. But he's not missing a lot of chances. So that's not as straightforward as it looks. But it's without doubt, and Rodgers referenced it afterwards, that he is struggling with confidence. Maybe he's struggling with the price tag. Maybe it's hit him late because, you know, he scored 20 goals last season. He was okay. But right now, everyone is demanding a new striker, a starting striker, because they don't see Adam Eda is that.
Speaking of struggle, Russell Martin. Jeez, Tom, it's a tough
start. This is very, very cheery, this one.
God, it was mad, wasn't it? 20 minutes gone, getting hammered.
It was insane. It really was, like, and it could have been 4 and 5-0 at halftime. I mean, I'm not exaggerating. That is, I mean, Rodgers is like in heaven compared to Russell Martin. You know, that these things are relative, right? A lot and a growing number, and I would say almost the clear majority now of Rangers fans want Russell Martin out. They've already had enough. His team, it's the goals that they're conceding are astonishing. Absolutely astonishing. Incompetence at the back. Just the cheapest of cheap goals. And Martin's rhetoric after the match on Tuesday night was, we were brilliant in the second half. I'm proud of the boys, the way they responded. Now, that is a red rag to the Ibrox bull. The performance was bad enough, but to listen to Martin, and he was kind of cheery, way too cheery, given that Bruges kind of thought, we're 3-0 up, lads. Let's kind of relax a little bit here. Let's not anyone get injured, anyone get sent off. And Rangers pulled the goal back, and it's 3-1. But it's a bad scene there. And the new owners, some of the new owners were there at Ibrox on Tuesday, and it was vicious. It was absolutely vicious. So they can't miss that. I don't know what their track record is in terms of pulling the trigger on a manager this early, but he's got a tough away game against St Mirren, a nuggety team. Stephen Robinson's teams are tough. They're physical. They're all big men. He's then got Bruges away. He's then got Celtic. And then he's got Hearts and Hibs. Now, that's five games. Right. And if you talk to Rangers fans, they say, we mightn't win any of them. Well, if that's the case, they don't win any of those, then I think he's in mortal danger. I think they will win a couple of them, and they might limp, he might limp on, but he's got a lot of work to do. And he is saying, look, oh, we've had to change it, and you can't change it in 6-7 weeks, and that's true. But I think there's a realistic expectation that it would have been better than this. And there's no sign of progress game to game to game. In fact, you would have to say that the defending is worse, playing a couple of position players out of position, jars, and it's wild at Ibrox right now.
They nearly sacked Daniel Farke after he won the league with a record number of points and a million goals scored. So,
well, there you go. Yeah. So okay, that answers my question, right? So it's difficult for Martin, and I'm. Like, he played for Rangers, albeit briefly, so he would know how demanding it is. He played for Rangers at a pretty grim period. He would know what these fans are like, but it's almost like he's in the wrong movie, you know, that he doesn't kind of... The demands of the fans and the viciousness of the fans doesn't seem to register with him. I don't know. I mean, he's had to face a lot in his life. He's a robust character, but his team is not being built in his image. The team looks a soft touch.
One last one for me, a switch in sports. You were over at the Lions, were you?
I was.
Yeah.
I was.
Hell of a response from Australia in the meantime. We're actually doing a piece on it next. Can I just ask you about this news this week? I don't know how much you know about this, so maybe not too much, but the Welsh Rugby Union proposing to reduce the number of professional sides from 4 to 2.
Yeah, I think this is a kind of Sam Warburton proposal, wasn't it? I think he wanted them to go from 4 to 2. I get it. Like, I'm in a country that has two professional teams, right? Scotland, Edinburgh and Glasgow, that's it. Everyone wants Scotland to move up to 3 professional teams, but there's no money. There's just not the money. And that causes a lot of challenges. And it's certainly held Scotland back. And it will hold Wales back if they go from 4 to 2. But again, it goes down to a money issue, and they've got challenging times in Wales, really financially challenging times. I'm not fully up to speed with it, but I know it's been in the post for a little while now. This cutting two teams, and that's going to be a bloodbath.
I'm wondering, because we asked Alan Quinlan when he came back, the actual atmosphere at the 3 tests. They were ranging, but at their peak, they were brilliant between Australia and the Lions. Would you mirror that?
Yeah, definitely. First test in Brisbane was first 50 minutes, Lions total dominance, yeah. Big score, come back from Australia. It wasn't a great occasion. At that point, I'm thinking 3-0. I'd have written it in blood. glad it didn't. MCG, extraordinary. Just the whole vastness and a match to match. It was a brilliant occasion. And in the third, even though the third test was a grim battle, I found it fascinating. The weather was just horrific. And it was just a slugfest. Old school stuff, you know. And there was a grisly fascination with that for me, you know. And you'd have thought that the Lions would have won that slugfest, because they're more used to playing in those conditions than Australia would have been. But maybe Australia's motivation was greater. I think Joe Schmidt made a mess of this. I think for all his greatness, the Australia probably should have won this series. And he allowed these team to go in to the first test dramatically undercooked. And not just in terms of only playing Fiji in the warm-up, but also in terms of throwing a blanket around his players, protective blanket around his players, so they didn't play for the Force, they didn't play for the Waratahs, they didn't play for the Reds. A lot of them went into that game having played maybe one game in 6-7 weeks.
Yeah.
And they just weren't at the races. But you look at them in the second test, you look at them in the third test.
Look at them at the weekend just gone.
Look at them at the weekend just gone. So they're growing. And I think he kind of alluded to it, Schmidt, after the final test, that, yeah, he probably should have had another warm-up game on top of the Fiji game. And I think had he done that, and had he played some of his test players for Super Rugby teams earlier on in the tour, I think Australia would have won this series.
It's really interesting. It just feels like Schmidt needs somebody in his camp to say, no, don't do it. I'm going to, you know, here's the other side of it. Because he's clearly a genius at some level in terms of getting, you know, analysis and eventually getting something right. But it's frequently just, oh, balls, too late. I've missed the thing. Like, even bringing back the 10 last week, who was nowhere to be seen, and playing a 10 who hadn't played before in the first test against the Lions, you're like, if you,
yeah,
you know.
All of that. And you know, he'd said, I was at a press conference early on in the week of the first test, and obviously Skelton and Valentini didn't play in the first test. And he said, look, if this was the third test, I might be minded to play them. And I think, just play them. It's the first test. Just play them. And he didn't. And obviously, they went out pretty meekly. But you could see the extraordinary impact of Skelton when he played in the second and the third test. Schmidt was very unlucky. Like, he's won, over the three games, he's won four of the six halves. And he's done that with his best player, Rob Valentini, player of the year in Australia for the last 2 years, playing one half of rugby in the entire Test match series. You know, so the Lions, the legacy of the Lions, of this Lions tour, it was one, when we were leaving Australia, it was one thing. Well, it was one thing. Now it's changing, and I think it's just developing. Was it a good 2-1, or was it a lucky 2-1? And it's still to be determined.
Yeah, it's a great question to leave with. Tom English, BBC Sports. Pleasure as always.
Cheers, Tom.
Cheers, lads.